for comments. I'm Charlotte Henry. A bit of warning up front. For various reasons, not least the impending aging of my co-host Emma Bunnell, we're recording this episode slightly early, which, depending on how things go, will either be an advantage or a massive disadvantage. We'll unpick that in a minute. Hello, Emma.
Hello, Charlotte.
And let me say happy birthday in advance.
Thank you very much.
First round is on me.
And as They Might Be Giants once said, I'm older than I've ever been, and now I'm even older, and now I'm even older, and now I'm older still.
And you're not the boss of me now.
I think we might have had this conversation before.
And I've got the band wrong again, haven't I?
I think that might have been the other ones that everyone thinks is They Might Be Giants.
Yeah. Anyway, away from, I was going to say from Malcolm in the Middle to the Middle East, but I don't think I can do it.
No, don't do that.
Because we have to deal with, well, let me put it this way. I was sitting diligently trying to work on something else, and I'm getting increasingly frantic text messages from my esteemed co-host using various words like shenanigans. Now, and that is, well, first of all, tell us what happened in the House of Comments on Wednesday afternoon, Emma.
So throughout Wednesday, this was quite a developing story. Basically, what was supposed to happen was an opposition day debate on a motion set down by the SNP. It was their opposition day debate. And it was on Gaza. Now,
Well, let me jump in just to say a couple of things, because people might be getting concerned about, or a bit confused about where we're going with this. Two things we're not going to do on this show. We're not going to repeat any of the previous conversations we've had. Please go back and listen to our previous episodes. One of them was the last time the SNP did this, using their opposition day to put a debate on what, basically calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, because Benjamin Netanyahu is, as you will know, deeply concerned about the views of the Scottish National Party. So there's that happening, and you and I discussed it quite some length. I think fair to say both of us were not very impressed by the SNP playing politics with something so serious, for starters. So we're not going to repeat that. And obviously, last week we had to discuss it in the context of Rochdale and lots of important developments there. So please do go back and listen to those two episodes. But we do need to tackle the latest development, which are the scenes, sorry, that you were describing in the comments.
Absolutely. So what we're not going to do is go back and forth again on ceasefire, how that works, how that doesn't work. Today, as a...
Sadly, you or I cannot solve Middle East crises. If only.
The topical question is what happened in Parliament today, because it was all quite extraordinary. So essentially, basically, the SNP put this motion down. They withdrew a motion that they were going to put on Labour's 28 billion. Because for the SNP, the people they are trying to target, because they know that they're trying to save their seats from, is the Labour Party. So the more the SNP can put clear space between them and the Labour Party on contentious political issues, the better. So they withdrew their original motion on green investment, which they were going to try and embarrass the Labour Party with, to put forward a motion on a ceasefire in Gaza. They did that a week ago. Labour had its Scottish National Conference at the weekend, which voted to support a ceasefire. And Keir Starmer committed to doing so. So what that then meant was that Labour put down an amendment to the SNP's motion, which was more nuanced. It called for an immediate ceasefire from both sides, which I don't think the SNP's motion was quite as clear on.
So basically, we're at a stage where we've got two motions.
And they're not that far apart.
That's what I was going to say. To my mind, they're not so different. I'm sorry to rush you along. It's just we've got developing news as we're trying to record this. And basically, because of the two amendments...
Basically, those two motions were put forward. Mm-hmm. Then the government put forward their own motion, which was calling for humanitarian pause rather than ceasefire.
Which, as we discussed before, was all slightly dancing on a head of a pin.
Absolutely. Then the speaker took lots and lots of advice,
mm-hmm.
which all conflicted with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And he made a decision, and it's his argument, and we'll come to why I know what his argument is in a minute, was that he is particularly concerned about the safety of MPs. We talked about this last week as well.
Because of Mike Freer, yeah.
Yeah. And the MPs have... he wanted to be able to give the House as wide a debate and as wide the ability to support as wide a viewpoints as possible. So he, in a break with convention but not rules, accepted both the government amendment and the Labour Party amendment. What that then meant was that the Labour amendment would be voted on first. If that failed, which was unlikely because by the end of the day, the SNP said they'd vote in favour of the Labour Party amendment. If that had failed, i.e. the government had voted it down, it would have then gone to the government amendment. And if that failed, then it would have gone just to the SNP motion unamended.
So at this stage, we're going through the different amendments. And we then also get to a point, I'm just speeding this along because I'm guessing some of our listeners will have been following the extraordinary events as well, because there's one very serious question I want to come to, which is that of the future of Lindsay Hoyle.
Yes.
But let's just quickly wrap up this bit with the amendment.
So he took that and he said the Labour Party amendment would be voted on first, which essentially, as far as the SNP were concerned, took away their opposition day debate.
Well, as you were explaining, so I was going to say, it sounded to me like the SNP had lost their opposition day, which I can understand why they would be furious. However, just poorly I think they're behaving, and I'm very happy to say on record, I think this is really cheap, given the seriousness of what the discussion is meant to be about. I can understand why they would be annoyed. We also had a motion, just to wrap this bit up, where there was a discussion about the House of Commons sitting in private.
There was. So just before we wrap that bit up, the government were very angry about the Labour amendment being accepted as well as theirs because of the breaking convention. And so they withdrew their amendment. So it was then only going to be the Labour amendment to the SNP motion, which again would have passed, which again made the SNP angry because it would have essentially, as they say, as they saw it, losing their debate. There was a vote as to whether there should be whether the House should vote in private.
Yes.
I didn't really understand what that vote was particularly about, if I'm honest. I was watching the whole thing and it just sort of seemed to come out of nowhere. But the SNP walked out and refused to vote on that. So it actually only got 20 votes in favour.
Yes, it collapsed. And I wonder if that's slightly related to your point about the safety of MPs.
Well, I wondered that, and then I thought, well, it'll all be in Hansard, except, of course, that then what happened was the vote on the amended motion as per the Labour Party, and it was basically, it wasn't done through the lobby. There was enough people saying aye in the chamber because the Tories had decided not to vote either way, that it was just done. So as Lucy Powell jumped up to point out, the House of Parliament unanimously accepted a Labour motion, an opposition motion on foreign policy, which could be considered to be a confidence issue.
But apart from that, it's been a quiet day.
Lindsay Hoyle, who had been missing from the debate.
Yes, this is what I want to come to.
The debate had been led by the Deputy Speaker, Rosie Winterton. And so many points of
order. Not someone I would
mess with. Flooding in. Where's the Speaker? Where's the Speaker? Why has he done this? You know, he's broken convention. Lots and lots and lots of anger.
Yeah.
And, you know, asking the deputy speaker to request that the speaker came to the house, which sure. she refused to do. But then after the vote on the motion, Lindsay Hoyle then made a statement to the house, and I yes. swear he was close to tears.
Lindsay Hoyle appeared in front of the house and apologised. Now, we know at a stage as we're recording this that there is a motion of no confidence in the speaker, which, as I'm recording this, and it will be wrong by the time you listen to it, there were 33 MPs who signed that no confidence motion. Names that are jumping out to me from the Tory side include Sir Graham Brady. There's a host from the SNP as well that you will not be surprised to hear, including names like Joanna Cherry, for example.
So he is in his statement, he said, this is not the outcome I wanted. And he apologised, straight up apologised.
Yes, he did.
He said, this is not, you know, I worried about what was going to happen. And he was warned that this was could have been the upshot of it. But he was trying to thread a very difficult needle.
Mm-hmm.
The Stephen Flynn...
From the SNP.
From the SNP. So he said, I'd like to meet all of the party leaders and their whips tomorrow in private. Stephen Flynn was then on the BBC saying, "I it will take a lot of convincing for me to have confidence in the speaker."
He's made similar comments to Beth Rigby at Sky as well.
On the other hand, Ed Davey was interviewed before that, and he was saying that he felt that the SNP had behaved badly. So I'm guessing that the confidence of the speaker probably lies in the hand of the Tories.
Mm-hmm. Which is an interesting question in and of itself in the post-John Bercow era.
That's exactly it. I mean, I haven't seen scenes like this in Parliament since the Brexit days.
Well, as you were describing, and as I've been reading it about it, all I could think of was some of those shambolic Brexit nights. Now, I would say that Sir Lindsay Hoyle is a more humble and less egotistical man than John Bercow and probably can handle this a bit better, but it's not a great look. And it does lead us to the question of what comes next for the Speaker. He's got one more sitting day of Parliament to survive because we're recording this on a Wednesday. The vote took place on a Wednesday. Parliament doesn't sit on a Friday, so he's got to basically get through a Thursday. Unless, of course, what he doesn't want is MP spending a whole weekend plotting his downfall, which is often, we should say, what happens. And there's, you know, Sam Coates from Sky saying the speaker now has just 24 hours to save his political life, etc., etc., etc. Now, I find it extraordinary that Sir Lindsay Hoyle, who when he came to the speaker's chair was pretty well regarded across the house and was seen as a bit of light relief from John Bercow and that pretension and showmanship and whatever, and an assiduousness about Sir Lindsay Hoyle given his time as deputy speaker as well. That all seems to have blown up in one night. Can we remember, actually, we seem to have forgotten, or certainly certain MPs seem to have forgotten. I think I am directing my anger towards the SNP here. What is up for discussion here? What is up for discussion is a very, very serious crisis in the Middle East. Now, it doesn't need us to describe that, but that is what MPs, the representatives of this country, should have been discussing. And they've ended up having a Barney over procedure.
Okay, I want to make 2 points on that. First of all, they did discuss it. They did discuss it.
Yes,
and it was actually a good discussion. And all points of view were put forward, forthrightly but reasonably, I think. Secondly, and this, I think I agree with you in part on the SNP, nothing that the Houses of Parliament, which in an opposition day motion, i.e. this is not the policy of the government,
correct,
does on a ceasefire in Gaza is going to change what is happening on the ground in Gaza.
No, and you'll forgive my rather flippant comment.
Once you put...
from the beginning.
I mean, therefore, the SNP are politicking. Now, accusing the SNP of politicking is like accusing fish of swimming. But, you know, we are, all the parties were politicking, every single one of them, frankly. And yes, we can get a bit, it was not an edifying spectacle, but on the other hand, this is politics. It's politics raw and grim. It's politics in an election year is what it is. And I think there's a certain amount of, you know, once the SNP motion went down, I don't think this was inevitable, because this has been, like I said, it was quite extraordinary. I mean, I literally walked all the way from Stratford to Leighton, 45-minute walk, with the BBC playing on my phone, which I don't do very often, like literally watching Parliament. And so the scenes were extraordinary, but I'm not sure that the political, that there are very real political divisions, both within parties and between parties.
And that's totally fine, as it should be.
And I think that the idea that the SNP should play by Queensbury rules necessarily is high-minded and unlikely.
Well, as you know, I'm a very high-minded individual. I'm trying to unpack this all, and it's kind of hard because it's sort of playing out while we're recording, which is both very exciting, and I hope we're expressing that to listeners, the sort of, maybe exciting is not the right word, it's significant, and it's sort of engrossing, I think is probably the word, as opposed to exciting. You know, for personal reasons, I'm finding the whole thing that's been going on, particularly this week, there seems to be all sorts of shifts happening. I think in the run-up to this vote, I found it all rather grim and depressing. But that is as it is. I guess we have to round up this part of the discussion because we've got a few other things to race through, would you believe? With, say, where do we go next? And that's, I fear we don't, you and I can't really come up to, with an answer on this because the Labour amendment has been approved. It may, you know, Lucy Powell can say as much as she likes, it could be a vote of confidence in the government, but it's not going to happen. The government is not going to fall. She says now, realising she might have to record an extra bit once the government falls over the weekend. No, the government is not going to fall over this. The government's going to fall in a general election in a few months' time. And so on Monday, you know, the Israeli government, the Hamas terrorists are not worrying about the scenes in Parliament tonight. They're not going to be affected by that. And so tomorrow morning, Monday morning, the only thing I can see being by any means different is if the Speaker survives or not. You know, I don't believe government policy is going to change because of this vote. It will change perhaps because of events, and it has done. The way Lord Cameron, the Foreign Secretary, the way Rishi Sunak have been talking about the crisis in the Middle East has changed over the last few weeks. I don't think profoundly, actually. I think they've sort of maintained the line, hostages out, aid in, a pause in fighting. But I think some of the language has been more strident.
I think Cameron has gone further than Sunak.
A little bit, yeah.
And that in itself is quite interesting.
Yeah.
But I think there may be moves from within government now. I think I read in Playbook that there may be moves to halt arms sales, which obviously won't have an immediate effect, but is quite a strong move.
It's, yeah, we'll leave that out there for the moment. It's so with that's where we are, and as I say, come Friday night, Monday morning, this stuff is not going to make a difference. And I'm wondering, he's obviously lost the goodwill, and you know, when you've got people like Sir Graham Brady sort of doyens of the House losing faith, signing motions of no confidence in the Speaker, that does matter. But if he can ride that out, Lindsay Hall, in a few days, this, you know, it won't really matter what happens, will it?
No. Although reputations are cumulative.
Correct.
So I think it would be really unfair on Lindsay Hoyle were he to lose his position over what was clearly an incredibly difficult thing, which there probably wasn't a really easy right answer to. But I think that his relationships with a number of the party leaders has now been damaged.
Which, of course, is essential to his role.
Which is essential to his role. And what, in the end, a combination of that and his own behaviour, as reported by the House of Commons Committee, did for Burko. So I would say that if this isn't the end of Lindsay Hall, if that the motion of no confidence doesn't go through, doesn't pass, it's not the end, but it's the beginning of the end. Because yeah, I would say his time is probably more limited now than it was 24 hours ago.
Yeah, I think that sounds entirely sensible, which has its own consequences for the conduct of the House. Right, deep breath. We've got a couple more things to whiz through. There's probably going to be another by-election, but we'll deal with that at the time now when that happens. Not very much fun for Rishi Sunak, but anyway, we'll deal with that. There's a bit of an ongoing row between Business Secretary Kemi Badenoch and the former kind of former chair of the Post Office around
Henry Staunton
around payments to the Horizon victim scandal. She says she never told them to slow down how the payments got there for financial reasons. He says that's what the Post Office was asked to do. There's a letter floating around. It's interesting Badenoch has decided to go in on this one.
Yeah, she's gone in studs up, hasn't she?
Oh, I'm so proud of you. I was going to say studs up.
Get me with my football analogies.
Oh, I'm so proud of you.
That's two times on this whole podcast I've done a football analogy and got them right.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did goal hanger before and I knew what that was.
No,
what the offside trap is.
You did very well. But
So Kemi Badenoch has basically went into the parliament, which she's probably quite lucky she did it in that building because of the rules. Outright called Henry Staunton a liar following his interview in the Sunday Times where he said that he'd been told to go slow on payments, that the government were trying to limp into the electoral period.
Don't spend all the money.
Yeah. She then said, "You're a liar," and released the minutes of the call where he was fired, which were inconclusive.
So can I read what the letter actually says? This letter, Henry Staunton, from what I can tell, is Sarah Munby, the permanent Undersecretary of State. I'm going to pick my words very carefully. The letter I can see that's been published to Twitter reads, "In particular, I'd be grateful if you could focus on your attention on the following. Point one, effective financial management and performance, including effective management of legal costs to ensure medium-term viability."
I'm going to interrupt you there, please, because these are two different things. And this is what Gillian Keegan was relying on. That is the appointment letter.
Yes.
He never said that this was sold him in the appointment letter. Gillian Keegan kept saying, "No, you can see from his appointment letter that these are the things he was told to do." He claimed that this was in a conversation with a senior official.
Okay, so something not written down.
Something not written down. But he said it was so extraordinary that he made a contemporaneous memo of it.
Right.
Which he has now released.
I mean, I would say it doesn't seem that...
But what we mustn't do is confuse the letter that Gillian Keegan was talking about on the Today programme, yeah, with the minutes of the call of the sacking that Kemi Badenoch released, but frankly did not fully back up what she was claiming.
So it's, yeah, and I, you could equally argue that this letter that's floating around doesn't necessarily, like, is a fairly standard thing. Please ensure you're, like, financially responsible, not slow down the payment to the people we saw in the ITV drama. So anyway, this, I think all we can say for this one is that it is one to watch because it's obviously the government wants to prove itself to be on the one that fixed this problem.
Well, I think what's interesting in this story, other than government back and forth with post office scandal, is the role of Badenoch in it and what her motivations for her behaviour are, because...
we know what her motivations are.
Well, she wants to be the next Tory leader. Everyone knows that. But she is, I think, a little bit high on her own supply. She loves this whole I'm the anti-woke warrior.
Yeah. Thing. That's the whole game.
And I think that she's had so much puffing up of her, hey, straight talker.
Role. Don't mess around with me.
It feels like she may be overstepped in this circumstance.
Talking of high on your own supply, Liz Truss is at CPAC.
My God.
The Conservative Political Action Conference in the US, to promote this visit. She wrote, I think she's appeared on Fox News. She also wrote an opinion piece for the Fox News website. And I don't have the time or the stomach to go back through it, but it is
barking.
Quite extra. That was one of the adjectives you sent me when I sent it to you, yes. It's quite extraordinary. For me, I'll tell you, this is my take on it, right? There is no one more fervent than a convert. This is the sort of fairly wet Lib Dem of yesteryear, completely disappeared to the punchy national conservative right. And I can't quite get my head around it. And, you know, we've got things like, not only will left-wing elites work with their counterparts in nations like the US and UK, but they will be aided and abetted by enemies in China, Iran and Russia. The word woke is in here. It's quite bizarre.
But she's claiming that she was brought down by the deep state.
Oh, yeah, with the word
state. Is not just, right-wing talking points. That's conspiracy theory Trumpian madness.
Well, let me treat you to that paragraph, because I don't want to leave our listeners hanging. Because the left just don't fight at the ballot box and seek a mandate for their agenda when it is election time, their agents are only too active in public and private institutions and what we have come to know as the administrative state and the deep state. Anyway.
I mean, right. So I've been thinking about this.
You've been thinking about Liz Truss?
I absolutely can't stop thinking about it. No, so I'm, as we've established already on this podcast, quite long in the tooth. And I remember when quangos were first floated as a thing under the Thatcher government. They were, and the left were up in arms, it's undemocratic, la, la, la. So it really quite extraordinary that the woman who dresses, cosplays as Margaret Thatcher all the time, is talking about these, you know, unelected bureaucrat agents of the left. When, you know, it's like the whole argument has flipped on its head.
Yes. Well, I've been, yes, there's some very interesting discussion to be had about how the national conservative right is resembling elements of the left. But we can unpick that probably at another point, because we are well and truly out of time on today's rather frantic episode.
We promise not to go into quite so much arcane detail about parliamentary procedure ever again.
Oh, I don't promise any such thing. and I don't even promise that I might not, after you've listened to this, there might be another emergency episode that we put out at another point.
birthday. I'm not recording a podcast.
No, we won't do it on your birthday. You can have your birthday off, dear. Have a lovely day. Where else? Where can? Well, you're drinking gin and tonics or whatever. Where can people keep up with you?
Well, I will be at the Lion and Unicorn Theatre, where I am frequently found as a deputy, duty manager. Sorry. So I usher people into the theatre, and then at the end, I shake a bucket at them. I'm very good at it.
Nice.
But I'm actually going along as a punter, so I'm going to watch a lovely play by a friend of mine. It's the second outing of this play, and it's brilliant. But when I'm not in a pub theatre, you can find my work on Substack at Hard Thinking on the Soft Left. And I'm on all the social media platforms as EmmaBurnell_.
I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across the social networks. And please head over to theaddition.net for blogs, newsletters and the like. We know you want to support this show, because who else would spend their Wednesday evenings yabbering on about political procedure? So please head over to patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast, where you can support us for a meager £5 a month, and it makes a huge amount of difference. And who knows, maybe one day we'll do some special audio for those subscribers just talking about parliamentary procedure. You lucky lucky things.
We'll just read a line from Erskine May.
Sexy. Until we do that, I can't say when the next episode will be, but we'll see you then.